Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
They say marketing is a madman's game. So now we turn it over to the marketing madman with Trip Job and Darren Rand on Extra 106.3 FM.
Happy Saturday and welcome to the Marketing Madmen. Trip Job here on a gorgeous World Series weekend.
Whoop whoop.
Hey, we've got, since it's a World Series week, we're thrilled to have Nick Constantino, who's Vice President of Business Development for 680 The Fan and the Atlanta Braves Network, Radio Network. And also we have Joe DePriest, co-founder and managing partner of Next Up Ventures and Next Up Partners with us today. Welcome, guys.
Hey, great. Appreciate you having me.
Good to be here.
Yeah, well, it's exciting. We're obviously we've got not only I guess we've got World Series week, but it's also Georgia, Florida. So what a better time to talk a little bit about sports marketing and how businesses can use sports effectively in their marketing. So let's start off. Nick's joined us many times, and appreciate him jumping in for Darren as well. Joe, tell us a little bit about your background. It's fascinating, some of the places you've been in your career.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a little bit different than your typical sports marketing trend. I'm actually from the area. I went to Georgia Tech undergrad, was an engineer, and actually worked as an engineer at FedEx for 3.5 years. So I was, you know, designing, you know, route planning, early days of GPS, all of that. You know, got tired of looking at spreadsheets all day, went back to business school to get into sports. Kind of from there, got lucky, you know, landed in Philly with the Eagles, the Super Bowl year with Donovan and T.O., so that was a fun year. Kind of bounced up and down 95, landed with the Caps in D.C., started as director of marketing there, took over as CMO, and then eventually as Ted Leonsis bought everything. You know, Caps, Wizards, Mystics, we formed Monumental Sports, and I became CMO of all of that. So launched Monumental Sports Network. It's the first OTT for regional sports. You know, built out a full production company, you know, social media, branding, marketing, you know, it was a great time. Did that for almost 9 years. And then from there, I launched Next Up. So, you know, we just got started about 2 years ago. You know, COVID was kind of the forcing mechanism of, you know, don't really want to get a real job. You know, if I can do this consulting thing with the family getting bigger and all that and work with a sports startup. So we launched that and, you know, here we are.
Wow. You know, I think there's going to be a lot to dive into during all that. And, you know, you mentioned that you are a local. Yep. Atlanta native. You also, Joe just had an addition to his family. And I think there's a great tie-in with the Braves. Let's start off with that a little bit. So I know, I think it was last Saturday night, you were didn't know that you were about to go into labor. Your wife was going to labor. So yeah, why don't you tell a funny story here we were talking about before we got going.
Yeah. So, you know, it was about 3 weeks out from the due date, but we had a feeling it was coming pretty soon. And sure enough, I actually played in a golf tournament on Saturday. So I went, you know, for the local. So the North Gwinnett baseball team had their baseball tournament or their golf tournament to benefit their baseball team up at Bears Best. And so I went and did that. And, you know, we got the call, you know, a few holes to go. Hey, I think it might be about time, you know.
So, of course, you finished all 18.
Yeah, so I got through 18. I didn't do the lunch, but I got through the 18, you know, went back, you know, passed the kids off, went to the hospital, you know, sure enough, here we go. And then, you know, it was about that time, you know, game was a little tight. You know, of course, we had it on in the delivery room. And so, you know, right when Masick struck out Betts is when we had our fourth daughter. So, you know, and there we are.
Yeah. So she's got great timing.
Yes.
Right. And yep. It was funny because it reminded me a little bit of my first was due July 3rd. And so I ran the Peachtree Road Race. And now this is back in the days, really before we all had cell phones. Yep. And this was 99. And so I had the old quarter in the shoe. And literally, as soon as I finished, you know, pay phone, make sure everything's right. Okay. And luckily, it was another week before Lindsay was born. But
nice. Yeah, and actually, my son was born the Saturday of Masters when Tiger won. So we've got a couple of pretty lucky.
You can't leave Atlanta
kids.
Now. You're stuck.
Yep.
Yeah. You're stuck in Atlanta forever now.
Exactly.
You got those two things going for you.
Yeah, well, it's Fantastic. So let's talk a little bit about your experience up in D.C., all right? Because I know a lot of people are curious. And you started, it looked like, as you said, with one of the businesses, and then you kind of just kept growing and growing. So tell us a little bit about, you know, ways for people who are thinking about sports marketing. What are some of the tricks and things that you learned?
Yeah, so I started there in 2007 during the preseason. I remember I went, you know, you probably couldn't have thrown tickets on the sidewalk. People wouldn't have picked them up and come in, you know. But that was the relaunch of the Red, White, and Blue. You know, Ovi was starting to come in. It was Backstrom's rookie year. So I really hit it just at the right time. But, you know, not being a hockey guy, you know, from Atlanta, you know, the Flames were gone, you know, before I knew what was going on. The Thrashers came the year I graduated Tech and left. And so, you know, didn't know what I'd gotten into. But, you know, it was in when I was in business school, you know, it was really all about networking my way in, meeting anybody and everybody that I could to find the open door. And that's where my engineering background came in, you know, because back in, you know, the, you know, 2000, you know, 4, 5, 6, nobody was doing analytics across sports, you know. And so I was able to kind of create my own niche with the Durham Bulls when I was at Duke. And that's sort of how I, you know, met through the Duke Alumni Network, you know, who became my mentor up in Philly, who then brought me down to the Caps. And so, you know, it was kind of right place, right time, but it was probably 100 different phone calls before I got that right place, right time. But, you know, really using my analytics background at the time to kind of carve out my own thing was how I did it.
Yeah, looking at things that other people are not doing.
Yep.
I mean, that's really kind of what you're talking about. And yep. I think that's probably some of the beauty in sports marketing, where some of the early firms got it. Yep. And used it. And then now the problem is, I think everyone's trying to get in. And how do you differentiate yourself and what's different? I know, Nick, you see that all the time.
Yeah, for sure.
Of the followers versus, you know, some of the advertisers. And I want to go even beyond advertisers. A lot of times it's people who turn it into a full experience.
Yeah, so. I think the funny thing is you either want to be the first person to do it or one of the last people. It's always people in the middle that have the hardest time. The early adopters really make impact really quickly, and then the people who let it kind of the dust settle for a couple of years and then come in really do well. But if you're that middle, it's really, really tough in anything when you're taking on any trend. Data is a great example. If you're the first one in, you have an advantage over everybody. But like you said, Tripp, now everybody's doing it, so now everyone's leveling the playing field. So you come in after all that, and now all of a sudden you learn from the mistakes of everybody else. That's something we're dealing with. I mean, data has helped us, but at the same time, we saw all the mistakes everyone else was making. It's why it's helped us a lot also.
Right. What, Joe, what are some of the things you've seen change in the sports marketing and management world? What are the trends, and how can people apply it to their business, whether in sports or not?
Yeah, I mean, I think you've already kind of started going down the path on, you know, the analytics side of it, you know, which, you know, looking at it, you know, the CMO role is so much different now than it was when I started, you know, and even when I started, you know, dating myself back there. I remember when, you know, my head of digital was like, hey, we really should be on this Twitter thing. I'm like, what the heck? Nobody's going to want to do that. 140 characters. This is stupid. And so, but sure enough, you know, you see where that grows and looking at the trends. And, you know, it's sports is always interesting where they're usually trailing the play a bit. You know, because they're never going to have big budgets. They're basically mom and pop operations, you know, but, you know, are billion-dollar businesses, you know, the way they're run. And so, you know, they're never going to be the first ones to adopt a lot of stuff. But, you know, social media was one of them where we did. And, you know, really looking at it, we always looked at it from three ways. You know, whatever we did, you know, does it grow the brand? Does it grow the fan base? Does it grow revenue? You got to do all three of those. And so, you know, keeping those three in mind, you know, was what I really ingrained in my staff and what we did. And so as the Caps took off, you know, really kind of really tying in all of that and measuring and showing the value to the sponsors and measuring fans and creating a 12-month calendar. So you've always got that touch point because then, you know, around, you know, 2009, when the economy started going downhill, you know, people kind of start prioritizing what's important to them in their lives. You know, people were still coming to Caps games. We were still at the top because of, you know, a lot of the work and the marketing put in there, you know, and, you know, brands was important to them. It was important to their daily lives. And that really kind of kept things going.
And I love what you said. You understood your, you know, your fan base.
Yes.
I mean, that's really key. And that's not always the same. And maybe you can talk a little bit about that. We'll get Nick's perspective, too. So you eventually had a hockey fan base in D.C., an NBA fan base, and then a WNBA fan base. And while there's some that overlapped, those
not
are three
much.
Different fan bases for the most part.
Yeah, they are very different. So you want to leverage, you know, obviously when you've got a company the size of Monumental Sports, as much as you can leverage that, but they are very different fan bases. And so, you know, but, you know, we still wanted to reach out to Baltimore. You know, that was important to us. You talk about expanding the fan base. You know, we took the Caps up there for a preseason game, did the same thing for the Wizards, you know, kind of, you know, calling back to the 70s and 80s when they used to do that. But, yeah, so it was a similar strategy that we employed, but you know, going after completely different, you know, fan bases and tactics that we use to reach those. You know, on the Caps side, you know, female fans actually grew faster than male fans when the team was taken off. We launched the first, you know, female fan club in the NHL. We saw that opportunity, capitalized on it, and so, you know, we added sponsors to it, you know, really grew that side. Growing youth hockey, youth basketball, again, you know, different tactics to do it, but you know, both were extremely important to both sides of it to create that longevity.
Yeah, Nick, how do you, you know, with some of your advertisers that want to cross from the Braves to some of the other properties you guys work on in town, how do you handle that? Because again, the Braves, when out with Georgia, it's probably a very similar fan base, but you start to get in some of the others and it starts to differ a little bit.
Yeah, sure. So we are kind of one of two things. We're either an activation element or an entry level element. So activation is Truist just slapped their logo on the park. What are you going to do now? You have a big billboard. What are you going to do to activate it? And that's actually one of the flaws most people do is when they do these sponsorships, they don't put activation dollars towards it. So you have the sponsorship, but you're only seen by the 18,000 people that are in the arena that night. How are you expanding that to make sure everybody else knows that you have that partnership? So we fulfill that role. We do a really good job of it. Radio is just it's a little bit more intimate and personal, and you're reaching people, you know, when they're in their car, reminding them of what they saw in the arena the night before. The next one is entry level. I mean, you know, sports sponsorships, I'm sure Joe can throw out some numbers that'll baffle everyone's mind. Yeah. Even 10 years later. But, you know, when you start seeing two digits before the million, you know that this thing's about to get out of hand. So we have that entry level. We get people on as a sponsor of something like Bulldog Roundtable. They have the Georgia Marks for a couple grand. So we're either, we're those two sides. It's never going to be a sponsorship that's going to have all the analytics and all the activation elements. But for if you're looking to get your feet wet or expand what you're currently doing, that's where we and most radio stations that have those sports rights really come in.
Right. No, it was fantastic. And I think we're going to dive in some examples on the difference between sponsorship and activation when we come back from the break in just a minute. Nick, I know you were talking a little bit. You've got a couple of quick analogies and stories from that we can pull in.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, I was in D.C. when Joe was doing all this stuff. So I got to see a lot of that in person. And I lived 12th of Massachusetts, for those that don't know, is about five blocks from the arena. So I think he caught the perfect storm, like he said. For those that haven't been to that Chinatown area, bar on bar on bar, train station right there, easy to get to it. Ovechkin just started playing. I mean, you hit it at the exact right time, in the exact right city, in the exact right place.
No, yeah. It's really all the marketing that really got to go.
It had to be.
We can tell the banter, and so we're going to dive in. You'll get a little more than just these snippets here when we come back from the break. So you are listening to the Marketing Mad Men on Extra 106.3. Go Braves.
This morning in North Carolina, wheels are spinning. Determination is winning. A passion is now a thriving business, and it shows no signs of slowing down. How? The power of a conversation. Like the one Clint Spiegel had with First Horizon Bank about starting a bike wheel manufacturing facility in Asheville. Now it's not just talk, it's rubber meets road. First Horizon Bank, let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Clint. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
Now back to the Marketing Mad Men on Extra 106.3 FM.
Welcome back to the Marketing Mad Men. Trip Job here with Nick Constantino and Joe DePriest. We are talking sports marketing since it is World Series week and also Georgia Florida Day. Right before the break, we were talking about one of the big differences, and a lot of businesses don't get this, is the difference between sponsorship and activation and how to make your dollars work. So let's start, Joe, with you a little bit. Maybe give some examples of some things that you really tried to work with your advertisers to make sure that you were able to help them do more than just put their logo on the side of the boards or the side of the building or, you know, any number of things that they would do to sponsor the sports teams.
Yeah, and when you talk about trends over the last 20 years especially, you know, it used to be that, hey, it's sexy to sponsor. You know, you slap a logo on an outfield, you know, eventually it would say you just put it on the website, whatever, and there's no thought to it. And the companies also didn't measure the ROI on it. They're like, oh yeah, there's my logo, I feel good, I'm associated with Caps, Braves, whatever it is. And then you can't do that anymore. I mean, it's you've got to prove there's a value to it. And the way you get the value is to engage with the consumer. You know, back to, you know, brand fans and revenue. What we worked with all of our sponsors with is ideally, hey, let's find something that's going to resonate with people. We created, you know, what was called the Chick-fil-A foul shot for the Wizards. Yeah. You know, if you miss two free throws in the fourth quarter, the opposing team, everybody wins a Chick-fil-A sandwich. People would go nuts. I mean, the Wizards could be down by 40 at that point, and people are going crazy. And it would even make ESPN.com would talk about it. You look at the freeze and racetrack, what the Braves have done with that. I mean, you've created something that adds value to the experience. Now people engage with it. Now it's going to increase the value for the sponsor. It's going to increase it for the team. It's going to make sense. You should never run a 30-second TV commercial on an arena, you know, center hung. You know, it's going to ruin your experience. And so, you know, it was always, how do we integrate? How do we develop something? And the best sponsors, when they get the value, are the ones that are open to that. You know, we'll bounce ideas back and forth. Let's, you know, get the right thing. It's going to fit for your brand. It, you know, some things are just not going to make sense. And so right. the companies are willing to engage with that.
Yeah, don't run
get the value.
Don't run the 30-second ad, but sponsor the 30-second kiss cam promotion.
Yeah.
I mean, trust me, you get so much more for that. You know, tie-in, right?
Yeah, and just make sure it makes sense. You know, the smile cam, or if you're a dentist, it makes sense. A smile cam, Budweiser, that probably, well, I guess maybe it would.
Budweiser,
I mean, some of these just aren't going to make sense. So, you know, have that connection. You know,
Orkin,
goes a long way.
It's probably not the right spot for Orkin to do the smile cam or kiss cam. Yep. But my days, whether it's at Nino, whether KC or Oldcastle, we used to have a lot of opportunities. And, you know, we turned them down if we couldn't do that experiential, the activation that Nick was talking about. And, you know, one of the ones that a few years ago, Belgrade was able to have an opportunity to put a huge banner, essentially a whole section of the Loudoun Raceway. And so we were like, okay, what else are we going to get for this? Well, it turned out that we were able to get a whole bunch of tickets, bring people in. We helped build a patio, and we were able to bring customers into that patio the entire race weekend. And so everyone was trying to tout the, you know, the banner, which was huge. I mean, it was as big as Toyota's. They had one section of, you know, the field, and we had, or the racetrack, and we had another. But that didn't mean anything. It was bringing people in the entire weekend. And these were contractors. So the customers were the type of people who really liked NASCAR. And that was kind of the key versus just being out there and being a sponsor, as Nick, I think you see a lot of times.
Yeah, I think it's also changed a little bit in the kind of client, right? If you're talking about a Coca-Cola or one of these big guys that have done this for years, they have departments of people whose just job is to, how do we activate this? How do we analyze this? Truist is a great example from where they started to where they are now. You know, Truist made a decision about 10 years ago that they wanted to be the big player. They probably knew the BB&T merger was happening. They probably knew all that stuff. So they had to get that, claim that territory to be part of it. So they now are staffed to do it. But there are a lot of clients. You know, one that comes to mind, Kauffman Tire was a great example. Kauffman Tire is a longtime Braves advertiser, mom and pop shop, right? Mark Kauffman was the guy we dealt with.
Yeah.
So they sponsored the Braves, and their idea was fourth inning, the Braves hit a home run, $144 off your tire. Who in God's name is going to remember that after they get out of the arena, drive their kids home, come into the thing, get up and go to work the next day? So what happened? We added the radio campaign. The next morning, we announced it on the radio, not in Braves inventory, in our inventory, just to remind people we knew they were Braves fans. Next day, three times wrapped around the building because he was doing $144 off any tires, no matter what. It's a screaming deal. Needless to say, after the first day, we signed a three-year extension after one day of doing it.
Yeah.
So that kind of company who may not have the manpower needs the reminder the next day. They need that. They're not. It's not as – you don't see the commercials on TV all day. They don't have the capacity to just slap that logo on everything. So that's a great example, those kind of clients. And they exist in every market. I'm sure you had them in D.C. I remember Mattress Warehouse was a big spender up there. There were those smaller shops that wanted to get into sports but didn't necessarily have the budgets. That's where something like radio or even social media can
really help. It's integrated, and you're really tying the experience all together versus just a transactional advertisement.
Yeah, it's got to be a part of your whole integrated marketing calendar. Everything you do, it's all got to tie together. Every message has got to build off the other message and build a consistent story. It can't just be a one-off, I'm going to throw a sign up, or I'm going to buy a couple of radio spots, whatever. It's got to all fit together for your strategy, no matter big or small. It's the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, we used to – that was the other thing we would get from our salespeople. Oh, man, Cambridge has got the boards on the Ranger, you know, game, and, you know, we need to do that. And they're like, we don't have the footprint in New York to be able to do anything with it. We don't have tickets. You know, we don't have, you know, the facilities and all in that market. I'm not going to do it just to advertise to be on the boards, you know, of a hockey team. you know, in a certain market. But a lot of people, they see their competitors do something, and
yep,
they don't.
For sure.
A, they, you know, Nick was talking before, data sometimes is we learn the things we were doing bad, but you follow people, and you don't really know why they're doing what they're doing. So how do you kind of, you know, talk to clients and try to get them to think about what they're going to be doing with that sponsorship?
Well, I mean, you've talked about this many times before. It's be true to your brand, but also know what you're trying to accomplish. Don't be persuaded into doing something to put a logo up. What is it are you trying to do? You know, and one of the things we deal with a lot is a client who wants to raise prices. Okay, they want to raise prices, but you can't just bombard the market with raising prices. So what do? All of a sudden now you become a Braves affiliate. Now because you're associated with the Braves, it's kind of the go-ahead to raise prices. And again, you know, that's a small-level sponsorship, but a big-level sponsorship, you see that Braves logo, I mean, your value perception goes up. You know, Hyundai Sonata, oh, official of the Braves, like, wait a second, Hyundai has the Braves? And yeah. These things are all happening in your brain, so those things make sense. So you have to be honest what you're trying to accomplish, right? If you, let's say, you know, the Braves are in Cobb County. When the Braves moved to Cobb County, we got a lot of Cobb County businesses aboard because they wanted to show support for the team. You know, the crazy thing about sponsorship is it used to be the big teams, but now high school sports, you have NIL, which throws this whole thing off. But every time you add an element, I mean, just this station alone runs, we do high school football, we do the Gladiators, we do the, you know, you have all these, the Swarm, all these different teams that all are looking for sponsorship and all are trying to get sponsors aboard. And again, doing it just to do it is not always the answer. Doing it because maybe your car dealership is close to the footprint is the answer. Then you get into the really murky waters, and I'm sure Joe could talk about this, is the quid pro quo stuff. You know, the laws are crazy, but, you know, Miller Lite ain't buying that sponsorship unless they're placed in every single place, and that be illegal. Especially in D.C. That was very illegal. You know, Live Nation, I remember, we had a sponsorship with Marriott. So, God, every time I travel, I had a card, and I can only stay at Marriott. Yeah. So those things have established even more and more. And the coupon codes, the Amex special offers, those things have gotten so out of control now. The problem that I see is they're almost devalued because everybody is doing it again. So there's nothing special about the offer. And ticket prices have gotten so insanely expensive that there's nothing special about anything. But that's not here nor there.
No, Joe, how would you take that? Because, again, I know that the sports teams are looking to fill out their roster of sponsors. Sure. But, you know, if someone that just doesn't understand and is not connected but just wants to do something, how did you react to that potential sponsor? Because I'm not sure you wanted a disenfranchised sponsor after a month anyway.
Right. I mean, a lot of it was just building on, you start somewhere and you grow from there. And so, you know, our goal was to create a 12-month calendar. We're not just the 82 home games. You know, we're 365 days a year. So we're going to create fan fests. We're going to create conventions. We're going to create engagement points. The NFL has always done a great job of it. And so, you know, that was part of our goal. I was like, well, if you don't have $100,000, you're not going to get in the bowl during the game. You know, that's just not it. But here's these other activations we can do. Let's start somewhere. Let's prove that it works and grow it. You know, there's a company, American Pest. You know, they started really small and, you know, eventually grew into sponsoring the penalty kill, obviously tied into, you know, pest control. And, every year the deal got bigger because he saw the people that we were driving based on the sponsorship to his business. And so, but, you know, got to start somewhere. And so we could start $5,000-$10,000 and prove it. You know, we don't want to, you know, get somebody to write a big fat check when we know it's not going to work. You know, we're going to be upfront on it of this just doesn't make sense for you. Let's start this. Let's do this and grow from there.
Yeah. And I think a couple of things that Nick and Joe both said is make sure you understand where you're going to play. Right. So understand not only the property, but understand the audience they hit. And is that your audience? And then I want to get both your take, because you just said something interesting, Joe, about, you know, are you better off going after the big property, but only having a real, real, real small piece? OK, like let's say the Wizards or the Capitals, or taking that soccer team, indoor soccer franchise, or the local college team, but maybe having the chance to do a little bit more as long as the audiences are the same.
Right.
OK, let's don't say they're different audiences. But what are ideas as far as where someone should start? Big player, but just a small slice of the pie, or a little smaller niche property, and maybe you have a bigger slice of the pie.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to get lost in the shuffle. I mean, you can walk around an arena and you see the different signs. If somebody buys one of those, nobody's going to see you. Nobody's going to do anything with it. And so with Monumental, yeah, we had, if you don't have the big budgets for the Caps or Wizards, all right, you can go, you got the Mystics. All right, well, then you've also got, we watched a couple AFL teams. And then you start going into some of those different ones. And if you can get a bigger piece of those eyeballs, even if they're not as many eyeballs over here, if it really has an impact and people resonate, because like Nick said, if they don't remember you, it's not going to matter. If you got that one sign that you might have paid the same thing for that same money, you could get a whole lot bigger slice of the pie for the Mystics, then that's where you should probably go. And then, you know, a lot of it too is sports marketing right for me? Well, if the Mystics works for you, then now, hey, now I'll try the Wizards. Now I'll try something else and go for it. And fortunately, there's a lot of analytic tools these days to measure it. And we can, you know, it's not like we say, oh, 18,000 people saw it. It's like, well, I can now measure all your social impressions and pick up every time that logo hit and where it all went. And I can prove to you that it worked. So now you want to do more.
Yeah. No, great advice. Well, let's shift gears a little bit because, Joe, you have moved on with all your experience and you've kind of jumped into the startup world, also still in the sports marketing. But why don't you give us a little bit of background about what Next Up Ventures and Next Up Partners does? And then we kind of want to talk about that because we do have a lot of startup and early stage companies that listen, and I want to tap your experience there.
Yeah. And so we sort of had an idea kind of pre-COVID of, you know, I spent a couple of years on a multi-platform before, you know, diving back into this side. You kind of got the edge to get back on the sports media entertainment side of it. And so it initially started with, well, let's get into the sports world, make some angel investments, help some startups early stage, really interested in where things are going. And so that was sort of how Next Up Ventures started with, you know, we, you know, help startups raise money. We're not a broker dealer. We don't put a, you know, we don't, you know, facilitate the raise, but hey, let's see if we can find some ways to work with them. And then we also built out a consulting side that can then help them grow. So we're able to then, you know, from the earliest stage startup that doesn't have any money up to a Series A, Series B, we've got consultants we can grow with. It's almost a built-in accelerator. And so that's been our vision, something that we think is much different. There's plenty of advisory companies out there, there's plenty of ventures, but we think we put them together in a way nobody else really has that seems to be resonating with the startups that we can grow with them versus, you know, a lot of times you start with a small agency, now you have money, now you go to somebody else. With us, hopefully they don't have to do that.
Well, and they understand, or they're working with someone who understands the industry too.
Yes.
And that's the challenge with a lot of startups and the agencies they work with. You know, they really don't understand the market they're in.
Yeah, there's a lot of founders, especially on the sports side, that don't really understand sports, whether it's actual sports or, you know, connected fitness and Nike and how some of those work or whatever it is. And so, you know, you can burn through a lot of cash really quick that way. And so that's what our value prop is, hey, we can, you know, help you get where you want to go a lot faster with the experts that we have. We've got 50 built into our network that, you know, unlike, you know, Techstars, you have a mentor for a couple of months. With us, you could have mentors for 2, 3, 4, 5 years if you want to and stick with us. We can help you grow there and get you where you want to go.
Yeah, no, it's wise. And we see it with, you know, if someone all of a sudden gets that money and then they start to go hire an agency, and an agency's done some startup work.
Yep.
But again, if they don't really understand that marketplace, you know, someone's just throwing money away, but they know they need marketing. So, you know, what are there so many kind of cool examples of some things you can talk about? Some of the, you know, there's so much going on in sports marketing today. I'd love to hear some of the things that are out there.
Yeah. And so actually our first investment when we initially started Next Up Ventures was a company called Star Stock out of New York. It was kind of the NFT before NFTs. So their model is it's a sports card marketplace where they have the physical cards kept in a vault. And so you can buy and sell them just like the stock market, but you, unlike eBay, you don't have to mail the card. And so you're trading them real time. Yeah. And so that company came to us without an MVP, just some pretty PowerPoints, a really cool CEO. And, you know, we dove in there, and which, you know, COVID hit, they exploded. And then that's where the NFT started taking off, which is, you know, we're getting a lot into that area now as well, you know, from some different marketplaces. You know, it's interesting. Things are moving so fast there, but nobody seems to really know where they're going. And so there's a lot of opportunity.
There's a lot of that in sports in general, man. Yes. NIL, do that, you know, podcasting, everything. No one knows where it's going. No one can give you that advice. Yeah. They'd love to give you advice on what to do right now, but no one has a clue where it's going to be.
Yeah. Yeah, everyone just wants to be, you know, their few minutes of fame, right? Yeah. And NFT, I mean, that's one of the, and for those who don't know, it took me a while before I figured out non-fungible tokens.
Yes.
And so I don't get it. So for me, I'm not playing in that area, but I know a lot of people, oh, this is the next wave. you know, et cetera. And I think that's the challenge out there is, you know, a lot of people don't get it, but people hear it's the latest thing. And is it a trend or is it a fad?
Yeah. And I mean, I think if you talk about the blockchain and all that, that's not going anywhere. I mean, when you look at where the internet started and now you get into block, but what is it going to be? Is NFTs the same a year from now? No. You know, what, you know, right now, like I said, it's, you know, ready, fire, aim, throw some NFTs out there, get this out there. I want to do it. And with investors throwing a lot of money at it, it kind of makes sense. But, you know, I don't think it's a fad at all, but I think it's got a lot of evolution to go, you know, tying it to whether it's, you know, physical objects plus the NFT, where your marketplace is going. You know, right now it's a lot of, you know, like NBA Top Shop, you know, you can only buy and sell within that platform. You can't take it somewhere else. You know, you can't like put it on OpenSea or anything like that. So where is that going to go? And there's so many companies trying to kind of figure it out. And so I think, but, you know, you look at, you know, a baseball card, you know, it's piece of cardboard somebody printed on, you know, so now this is a digital thing that you can always take with you. Is it really that different? Nah, not necessarily in the digital world today. And so I think, you know, there's going to be opportunities and different places it can go. But I mean, who knows in a couple of years what it's actually going to look like. But it's going to be here, especially now that you can validate and what you can do on the blockchain. It's going to make it, you know, longevity.
Yeah. And I think, well, the validation point, and then is it something you enjoy? So I mean, Nick, what's your view? I know you're
I think one of the problems right now is everyone is trying to artificially create supply demand issues. So if you look at something like an NFT, they're trying to create that there's only a limited supply of them, therefore spiking demand, but it's not worth anything. It's worth $0 unless someone's willing to pay for it. So, you know, I'm an old school economist and I believe that supply demand can't be fudged and you have to really force supply demand, which is why baseball cards, for example, when you really get into that game and you start realizing, oh, my Ken Griffey Jr. card's not worth what? And it's like, well, you know, there's 8 million of them produced. And you're like, oh, damn it. Well, I thought it was going to be. And then you start realizing the limited prints and you see why supply demand exists. These things, they're trying to alter supply demand curve on the fly. I mean, you see it in with all things in sports. Nikes, they only put a certain amount of shoes out. You know, the good ones just say limited supply. They don't say how many. They just say it's limited supply and people will buy the crap out of it. You know, that might work in an up economy, but there's some point where the value of these things is just going to plummet all at the same time. And you may have been an early adopter. You might have gotten in, but I wonder when that inflection point is going to happen.
And it scares
the crap out of me because you see it coming.
Well, at the end of the day, it comes back to it's worth what someone else will pay for it.
Yeah.
Right? And that can be really, really high, or it can be, as you said, worthless.
Worthless.
You know, and that's the, you know, and I think that's the side of people are looking at it. You know, just understand that it is a speculative type market. I agree with you.
Yep.
There's some real things there. Yeah. And I think there's some cool
stuff. The tech behind it, the blockchain behind it, the way you can validate and verify things is there. But ultimately, that item is only worth what the market declares that it's worth. So we'll see. We'll have the other thing that I think is why sports is so important, why everyone wants to be in the startup game. You know, one of the things this day is instant gratification. And you look around and everyone's trying to get that quick sale or that influencer. People don't change their sports affinities.
Yeah.
They don't
change
the teams that they're popular, that they care about. So when you can hook those kids young, those are going to be lifelong supporters of the brands. And I mean, just the amount of people that call us and say, hey, what was that garage door company? We heard it on the Braves. We want to buy them. They don't even ask what they don't care. They just heard it on the Braves. This has to be a company,
trust.
And they're going to go buy it.
Yeah, they got to
build that trust. So I think that's why people are rushing to the sports market, because I don't think that exists in many other places, where that lifelong affiliation and partnership with the team, I don't think that there's many other places where that exists. You can tell by the TV ratings. Everything's on demand right now except that.
And I think some of the well-done ads in the sports marketplace, and Joe, get your opinion on this, a lot of times it's half supporting the team and half reminding people of the brand. It's less about, you know, all the brand, all their products, all their services. It's a little bit of both. And so it's not as pushy. It is more, you know, creating that relationship with the brand.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what it is. You want people to think, oh, I need this. You know, I connect this to the Braves, who is really important to me. So, yeah, I'm going to go look at them. Are they a better tire company than this other one? I don't know. There's not that much different, but they support the Braves. So, yeah, that makes sense for me. That's where I'm going to go. And so I think that's got to be the biggest piece of it. And there's a longevity play to it, too. You know, companies become just forever associated with the Braves or the Caps or whatever it is. So the more you can tie into that emotion, you know, because sports is all about the emotion piece of it. So the emotion of them supporting the Braves and me having an affinity there is more important than, are they really going to give me a little bit better thing than this other person will?
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's a great lesson to business owners out there. Whether you're doing, you know, advertisements in the sports world or just general advertisements, don't try to overdo it. It's not about all your products and services. Don't try to, whether it's a 30-second ad, a 60-second ad, cram 18 things about your company into it, right? Is there an affiliation? In this case, we're talking sports. And is there one thing you want to leave them, you know, people to think about, kind of going back to your Kaufman Tire, the one thing of, oh, you know, it's the four bagger, so I get a discount type of thing. Now, we're not promoting discounts. That just happened to be the way they did it.
Discounts are okay. If they're attached to something like a sporting event, it's not perceived as a discount. It's not perceived as you're discounting something. It's perceived as a promotion, which tends to alter the value proposition. You feel like you're winning something, as opposed to you feel like you're getting a screaming deal because the tires suck.
Yep. Right. But, you know, we've all seen it. We've all heard it. The, you know, the ad where it comes on and for 30 seconds, it's a list of 12 different services that someone does.
Yep.
You know, people, I'm sorry, they start tuning out. At the third one, they start tuning out. There's not that connection. So I think there's a way that sports in some ways can help businesses think about how to position their business.
Yeah. I mean, you got to leverage that emotional connection that the fans have to their team for your own business, and that'll make you successful.
Yeah. So one of the things when we come back from the break, we're going to dive a little more into the you know, early stage and entrepreneurs, some learnings that you've seen, because I know you've got some tremendous experience both doing it yourself and now consulting with other companies. But before we hit there, you know, is there anything that, Nick, that you've seen recently that's just, man, this has been a new advertiser that's just pow, hit the mark?
Yeah, I think the really important thing here with when we're talking about these sponsorships and any client, any advertising, is let your staff know what you're doing. And I say that because I'm thinking now about, you know, this Kaufman Tire and like that Braves four bagger is great. But what if the guy that you show up is wearing Braves gear because he knows that they hit that home run and they show up? Now you're talking Braves with somebody. You have to expand these sponsorships. And some of the best advertisers we have are the ones that the staff listens to the station in the car when they're driving around making sales calls. So when they show up, they create the connection point. That guy is buying from you every time. If you can make that connection, that guy is buying every time. So let your staff know. Don't make them fake it, but they'll watch the Braves games if they see the passion in which you have.
Yeah,
they'll be a part of it. They have to be.
Love it. Don't just let the, whether it's radio, TV, whatever, do all the work for you. You know, it's your team involved. So we're going to jump in some more onto early stage best practices when we get back. You are listening to the Marketing Mad Men on Extra 106.3.
Spring is here and baseball is back. You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
Now back to the Marketing Mad Men on Extra 106.3 FM.
Welcome back to the Marketing Mad Men. Trip Job here with Joe DePriest as well as Nick Constantino. And, you know, we got a little bit into early stage businesses and how marketing, especially on the sports marketing side. But Joe, you've seen a lot, you've done a lot, and now you're doing a lot of consulting with early stage companies. So why don't you give, you know, your top two or three learning, you know, and advice from the marketing perspective for some of these startup companies?
I've learned a lot. I can't say I've got a big venture capital track record by any means. You know, I think over the last 2 years, especially where everything has changed. But, you know, it's been really exciting to just see the growth, especially over COVID, all the new companies that have coming up. A lot of people have good ideas, but how do you actually make them happen? You know, you see a lot of pitch decks of, oh, here's a $5 billion industry. Well, why is anybody going to spend a dollar on what you're doing? Understanding what your business model is, you know, showing where it's going. And that's where we jump in and help a lot of times, you know, whether it's having a fractional CFO that has done this, that has raised money, that knows how to build a pitch deck, how to position it, how to prove your story that there really is a market for this and I priced it right. And here's how much money I need. Here's what my runway is. you know, here's where I need to go with it. Having the right people on that, and when I talked about, you know, earlier about, you know, accelerating, I mean, you can spin your wheels 6-8 months on this stuff, or you can bring somebody in to help out with that side of it. And so that's,
yeah, because it's a cutthroat side. I mean, we do a lot. We've just finished up a pitch deck with a company in the addiction space in the healthcare and technology. And, you know, the challenge is if you don't have a real good and sharp insight to help these entrepreneurs, as you said, you'll spend a lot of time and then you'll get chewed up and you get the 90 seconds and that's about it. Yep. In front of investors.
Yeah, and you got to prove that you're the right person to do this too. You know, I've seen sports betting startups, they come in and the founder has no background in it, no advisors, you know, coming in. You look at the deck, it's like, well, but then you look at, you know, there's an insole company that Damian Lillard is one of the founders of and the main investor in. So you look at that, you know, on slide two, it's like, oh, well, if Damian's involved in it and his agent is involved in it, and I look at the people, all right, well, here, let me keep going down this path, there's probably something here for it. So kind of understanding what that story is and how you're going to tell it and legitimizing it. It's a volume game, you know, with the fundraise. How many at bats are you going to get? You know, we help companies get at bats. We're not a broker dealer. We don't help, you know, help them actually raise the money, but you know, we run demo days. We'll put them in front of 150 VCs, PEs, you know, they might get 150 no's, but you know, get them a lot faster than you would on your own. Oh, you know, man. But then, you know, so a lot of them will get 15, 20 introductions coming off of it. And you know, as you're trying to raise the money, you got to get your story tight, you got to get the right people behind you to do it, you got to get a tight, you know, 5-minute pitch and a deck, and then you just got to go and hit the streets and get in front of as many people as you can.
That's a great point. I want to get your take on this. Yes, you want to get in front of as many people, but I think one of the things we've seen, especially if they haven't done this before, is get them in front of 5 to 10 on that first try.
Yes.
Not the big 150.
Yes. Yeah.
Right, because I don't care how good of advisors you have.
Yep.
It's their first time. Even we run them through ourselves, do all the play hardball and all that, but you need that first time through in a smaller group.
Yep.
Every now and then you get the unicorn that hits it, but more often than not, you got to get hit in the nose a little bit in a small group.
Yeah, and that's what some of our bigger ones. There are a lot of, you know, Techstars companies or people that have been through the Boomtown Accelerator. We like to pull in a lot of those because they're looking, they're kind of that, you know, pre-seed seed round, but they've made the pitch. We've seen the pitch and they've got legit investors. You know, that was one of the learnings when we first started running these events, is you get a couple of people that, you know, that have obviously never really done a presentation for this kind. You go, you know, hey, do it in 5 minutes. Next thing you know, 15 minutes later, you have no idea where this thing's going. But that's where we try to add value too, is we'll get a room of people that have done this and we'll get on a Zoom with them, just pitch to us. You know, let's just run through it over and over and over and over. And we'll help them tighten that story, you know, get that deck of, yeah, you don't need a 30-page deck.
I was just going to ask you that. What's the largest number of pages, PowerPoint pages or whatever, that you've seen someone walked in the first time and thrown in front of you?
I think I got a 35-pager a few weeks ago. So.
Yeah.
Mm. I mean, that's...
I'm even counting the cover page and
a
thank you.
Yeah.
You know, 10 to 15 max. You know, that's including those. So the
and
real...
put the appendix in the back if they want to read it. Don't throw that stuff in the technical stuff on the third page.
The real content's 8 to 12, right?
Yeah. Because what it is it's the cup of coffee meeting. You know, let me get them excited about what I'm doing, show I'm legit, show where I'm going, and then they're going to ask for, hey, let me see your data room. Now you're going to pull your pro formas out. Now you can really start digging into that meat of it, but don't try to throw them all of this stuff right out of the gates because you're going to just lose it. You just got to get them interested.
And usually
in
they're not the person that are evaluating the financials either.
Exactly.
They're passing it to the next guy who's going to look that stuff over with a fine-tooth comb, so don't have that conversation.
It's a process. You know, so if you're out there, it doesn't, you know, again, there's always the story of someone who hit the first time and boom, money just got put on the table, but it's multiple meetings. It's a process. It's you're dating.
I will tell you from the marketing side, when you find that guy who did get that seed money that doesn't know what the heck they're doing, your eyes light up. Because one, you have a feeling that company probably won't exist in 5 months. Two, it's none of their money that they're advertising with. So as the marketer, you're like, oh,
Or if it's Darren to get mad. You know?
The only thing I recommend is you do cash in advance. I worked for a startup in New York for about 6 months. They were supposed to be the next Groupon. And it was 6 months, they wooed me over, huge salary, all this stuff. 6 months later, they walked in and said, sorry, the company doesn't exist anymore. And you're sitting there and you're like, what? How much money did you had a space in Soho above Urban Outfitters for that fit 200 people? There were 8 people in there and now you're out of business? I wonder why.
Yeah.
I wonder why. But it was a good experience to see it because, again, like you said, you know, you're in a money now where VC money is coming from everywhere. Private equity money, everyone wants to get in. They're making it so your 401k, you can buy into this stuff. They're just flooding free money everywhere. What happens when that drives up? You're not going to have this ability. So get good at your pitch tech. Make those mistakes, I would even say. I'm not saying do that first pitch. Like, fail first so you know what not to do.
Yep.
And then go out and
don't
pitch
it. Do it by yourself. I mean, truly, do not do it by yourself. Yep. All right? And I would say to go with Joe and, know, if you're in certain spaces, obviously, you know, in the healthcare technology space, that's where we've done more of, you know, helping people with pitch decks. But reach out to someone who's been through it, can really consult. Frankly, ask the hard questions. If they're easy on you, it may not be the best consultant.
Be open to feedback. You know, it's like, we're going to, you know, if it's not good, we're going to tell you it's not good. And so, you know, be open to find those people, like you said, that are give you that honest feedback and take it, you know, because there are, every deck's not the same, but there are commonalities here in how you need to, you know, win that first 5-minute meeting.
Yeah. So let's, we got about 2 minutes left. Let's kind of hit, what's your favorite thing today going on in sports? Is it related to the personal fan or, you know, tying into businesses? What are things that you really enjoy or you see starting to happen?
Well, I mean, most of my time is really taken up by kids softball these days, which, you know, isn't quite the moneymaker, but it is interesting. I've seen a lot of startups in the youth sports space, which gives me an appreciation for it and an additional value to where that's going. You know, just seeing the ideas that are out there, you know, like I said, you know, before, you know, sports teams kind of trail the play, now you're seeing a lot of them leading in these, you know, you're getting sports teams running their own accelerators and wanting to get out there, and that's exciting for me. And, you know, how can we get in and help the startups, help the teams, help the leagues, you know, build some of these, pilot, you know, we're, you know, talking to some, you know, pretty big companies about running some pilot incubator programs for them because they want to get involved in this, you know, because it's important to their shareholders. And, you know, you might strike the unicorn. If not, you've created a great experience. And so to see teams and brands valuing that experience to that extent is exciting.
Cool. What about you, Nick?
It's simple, man. Just seeing, you know, I'm a liberal, a New York liberal living in a conservative state. There's a lot of things I don't agree with people on, but what we agree about right now is that we want the Braves to go in and beat the ever-living crap out of Houston. And seeing that one thing that brings people together, that'll bring a CEO together with a valet parker that they could talk about, is the power of sport. And it's something I very fondly believe in. And even on the Little League level, whatever it is, I really think that it does more good for society than it ever will do bad. And that it's got a long way, road ahead of it to go forward.
No, I love both of those. And that's the power, as we talked earlier about sports marketing. Use it for customer experience and activation as well as just the advertisement. And I think those 2 points summed it up tremendously well. So thank you, as always, Nick Constantino with the 680 The Fan and Atlanta Braves Radio Network, and Joe DePriest with Next Up Ventures. Thanks so much for joining us. Fantastic discussion, and go Braves.
Go Braves.
Go Braves.
A lifetime of hard work. Children laughing in the kitchen. Family photos on a restaurant wall. A legacy that lives on. It all comes from the power of a conversation. Like the one Tommy Hall had with First Horizon Bank about taking over his father's Charleston-based restaurant business. Now the table is set for a whole new generation. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Tommy. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.